This portion of our Spotlight on Lorain is brought to you by First Federal Savings of Lorain. Your community is their community. First Federal Savings of Lorain, equal housing lender, member FDIC. And joining us to talk about things with the bank, we have John Malinowski. Thanks for stopping in this morning. Appreciate
it. Welcome. Thank you for the invitation.
I see the lighthouse, and I would remind that because you kind of have that in your logo as well.
Yes, we do.
Too, so that obviously shows the connection to Lorain. One of the things we wanted to talk about in that has to do with people, their money, their banking, what they do, is a lot of times there's people that are trying to separate you from your money in any different way. Now, scams have been around a long time. They come up in different forms, and you in that industry probably had to kind of always be on the proactive side of it.
Absolutely.
What are some of the things that are happening now that you see that maybe people are forgetting that this is not really happening, this is a scam, or things that might be coming up that are affecting your customers?
One of the scams that has been going on this year deals with the Internal Revenue Service. Customers, individuals are getting phone calls where the person on the other end of the line identifies themselves as a representative of the Internal Revenue Service. They may give a badge number, they may give their first name, but then they come across and they tell the listener that they owe a large sum of money, and that unless they pay that money right now, there are going to be additional taxes, there'll be penalties. Potentially, they will see that the individual is put in jail, so they're threatening the listener at that point in time. And what our listeners need to understand is that if they do receive that type of phone call, get the full name of the person who's calling. A lot of times the caller will give social security numbers. They give the last four digits of the social security number. They'll tell you where you live. They have information about you. They know your name quite well.
So they get there's a credibility where someone says, well, they must know all that stuff, so this must be true.
It has to be accurate. It has to be true.
That information is true, so what else they're saying also must be true.
Precisely. But the IRS, if we do owe additional taxes, they don't call us by telephone. They're not going to call us by phone. They're not going to send us an email. They're going to send us a letter in the mail. That is their primary contact to us taxpayers.
We, of course, in the new age of phones and quick information, we think, well, the government's already, you know, they're doing that sort of thing. They're ahead of everybody else. But usually, for the most part, federal government lags behind in some of that, and there's still a lot of the paperwork. And they, as you say, it comes by mail if they're going to contact you.
Exactly.
So what should somebody, I guess, do?
Well, number one, you've got to be careful because the caller wants you to pay that money right now. They want you to give them your credit card number. They want you to go out, get a prepaid debit card, and send that to a particular address. Send me a money order. Send me cash. Send me your money. And unfortunately, once that money is sent, that card is sent, some of that can't be returned or recouped.
Right. So then they're kind of out of it because they've taken it and they've sent it off to somebody. So obviously the best advice what we'd have them do, just hang up the phone?
Well, exactly, which is really the simplest. I think at times we don't think of that real quick. But to shut it down, hang up the phone. Number two, when a bank calls, the bank has all the profile information. They have your personal information. They have your account numbers. We have your account numbers. We're not going to ask you for the numbers. We're not going to use an entire series of numbers on the credit card. If we're talking to you, we may indicate maybe the last four digits of the number. If you're uncertain, the best thing to do is get the individual's name, full name, not just first name, full name, and hang up, call the bank back. Call the bank and let them know what's going on, the type of call that has come in. If it's have them call the bank, get the relay the information to the representative at the bank. Most times, 99% of the time, you're going to find out that it is a prank
call. You can almost say almost all the time it is. And if it's not, you find out the real thing. And if usually what happens is, of course, if you ignore the bank, they'll call you back again, or you can go visit the branch.
Precisely.
To find out the information.
IRS has a toll-free number. You can call them to confirm. Get in touch with them and let them know what's going on at the same time. They're interested if there are frauds going on in the area or scams going on in the area.
And a lot of times they're doing this to older people that may be least available to lose any of their money. Not that any of us can, but...
Although that's true, nobody is safe. All of us taxpayers are at risk of that.
Right. The other scam that you have that I wanted to mention involves the one where the bail bondsman will call, or somebody will call.
Yes, your grandson's in jail, your relative's in jail. Unless you give us your credit card number so that we have the bail to release him or her, your granddaughter, they're going to sit there for a period of time. And once that information is given out, now they're free to use your debit card, your credit card number, and start rolling up charges.
Those are the ones where people will call in trying to get stuff from you. What about the ones that are kind of a little more sneaky, kind of stealing identity or information that you have, or cracking your password? So, do you have suggestions?
Passwords. Most of us now have smartphones today, mobile devices, the iPads. Androids as examples. We're very quick to lock our homes and lock our cars when we leave them during the day. And we don't carry that thought process over to our mobile devices, to our smartphones. Most of the, all the smartphones have a passcode, a four-digit number that you can program into the device so that when you turn it on, you have to enter that four-digit code. And if you want to become more sophisticated, there's a way in the smartphones that you can take the simple code off and make it even more complicated. But absolutely use a passcode to get into the device, number one. And then on our computers, when we look at passwords, it's important to switch up the characters and the word that you're going to use. Let me give you an example. If I were to use WEOL 930 AM, I could start with a capital W. Instead of an E, put a 3. Instead of an O, put a 0. An L, I could use a 1. 930, I could use the 9, I could use an E in place of the 3, I can use a 0 or a capital O for the O, a capital 0, capital O for the 0. AM, use the at sign for the A. M could be a small case, could be uppercase. All of a sudden, we've taken what would seem to be a very simple word and we've complicated it to make it more difficult for somebody to try to break into our computers with a simple password to gain access and steal our identities.
So just trying to do things like that, which take we try to make something that's easy for us to remember, and I guess some of those things we have to kind of just have a little more discipline on making sure that it's strong enough, as they call it.
Exactly.
So that somebody can't break. It's the same thing as when you're looking for a lock on a door. You kind of want to get a deadbolt and a key maybe, and maybe something else possibly as well. As you mentioned, that we're all sort of, we know how to lock down certain things that we sort of see, but our phones and sort of getting into sites, banking sites and stuff like that, sometimes we don't think about that.
The other important item to remember is that the longer the password, the more challenging it becomes even for us to remember. Don't write the password down and put it in a open place. Write a password down and put it on the desk. Put it in a wallet. Put it in a purse. Those are items that can be quickly stolen. And now the thief has access to the password. Don't leave it out in the open. That you need to store that in a safe, secure location.
Well, you kind of, I don't want to say scared us, but you now made a lot of work. I got to take a breath here because I'm thinking,
I know I've got to go into my wallet right now and pull out my password.
Right. What is he going to say about the money I have under my mattress? Is that a different topic for a different day?
But
I
mean, put it in the bank.
I'll put it in the bank.
You had to put it in the jar and bury it in the backyard. See, that's the next step in something like that. But it's always a challenge. And I guess if we have something of value that we want to secure, we need to take responsibility and kind of protect it, use common sense, and also kind of follow those rules you talked about.
Exactly.
Strengthening the password.
Treat it the same way as we treat any valuable protection.
Exactly. And just kind of be alert, as you always say, with things. Even though we all want to be, somebody calls us on the phone and we hear a story that we believe, we want to be polite to people, there's a moment where you always have to kind of assume that something might be up and do your best. And I appreciate you coming on this morning.
Oh, you're welcome.
Well, as sharing some of those information about those type of scams. And it's interesting, you've probably been in the business many years. They come up in different forms. It's the same one, but instead of using what used to be emails, a phone call, a different source, or even somebody who meets you at a bus stop or something, they have a similar type of a thing. But you probably at some point also train tellers, people at the bank, just to be aware of certain things too, so that they're on the receiving end of somebody who comes in and seems to be wanting to, you know, get a large amount of money for a certain reason, they can kind of also kind of
and we do
out a little bit too.
We do train our staff to pay attention to key items, watch the transaction, the type of transaction that's going on, where money is being wired, how money orders are being made out, and try to guide customers properly. Try to protect them, help protect them in the safety of their funds.
Right. And that comes a lot of times, too, with a sort of a personal bank where people know them and they recognize them.
I believe
they know their habit and they can understand if something seems maybe out of the ordinary that they can kind of get it to their attention.
It's a matter of knowing our customer and knowing the characteristics and the traits of the customer and their typical transactions.
Well, John Milanowski from the First Federal Savings of Lorain, thank you for coming in this morning.
And you're welcome.
For a moment, I thought there was like a business meeting going on up here. All these men in suits were up here on the back porch. I thought maybe we were invading some sort of early morning business meeting that was taking place.
Well, you know, thanks to John and Brian here, the park manager, they confirmed. I wondered what that little, can you see it, Bruce, how the land ends out there to the west, and then you've got some water, and then you've got something coming up?
Yes.
John, tell us what that is.
Davis Bessey.
We can see it from here. Do you see what I'm talking about?
I got a lighthouse on one side and a nuclear power plant on the other there.
Look at that.
Well.
What a better. How can you start a day off any better than this?
I know.
The scenery is absolutely gorgeous.
Do you have a view from your office of this or no?
No, I do not.
Okay. Well, this is the place to be, the Rose Cafe on the patio.
And
absolutely.